This is Live Well Talk on a day in the life of a hospital chaplain. I'm Dr. Dustin Arnold, Chief Medical Officer at UnityPoint Health, St. Luke's Hospital. Today's episode is part of a series on the podcast where we sit down with team members, various roles at UnityPoint Health, Cedar Rapids, and get to know what they do on a daily basis. Returning to the podcast today is Brent Reardon, a chaplain with St. Luke's Spiritual Care Department, to discuss the role of the hospital chaplain and what they do on a daily basis. Brent, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Let's start with what got you into this?
Well, it could be a long story, but I did ministry in my younger years, went to a Bible college and did some ministry work with a small church. Kind of quickly decided that wasn't the right venue for me. I did photography for 30 years after that and really enjoyed that career. My wife was in the healthcare field. She was a hospice nurse at the time, and actually she's the one that said that I should become a hospital chaplain, and found out that my bachelor's degree wasn't quite enough. I was approaching 50 years old. I would have had to go back and get my master's degree in clinical training, and I didn't think at first that that was something I wanted to do. I didn't like school the first time and didn't really want to go back at 50. But I'm here, so needless to say, I did that, and been with Unity Point for 7 years for those here at St. Luke's.
Where were you at before?
Up in Waterloo at Allen Hospital.
At Allen.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Are you a Midwest guy?
Yep. Born and raised in Cedar Rapids and then moved to Missouri for the college experience and then back here.
Where? What college in Missouri?
Small Christian College, Central Christian College of the Bible in Moberly, Missouri.
Okay.
Yep.
I actually am familiar with that.
Okay.
My daughter plays basketball in Missouri.
Uh-huh.
And just some of the non-conference games. I know where that's at.
Yeah.
I do. Interesting. So give us an overview of what a hospital chaplain does.
All right. Well, a lot of people kind of liken it to a minister, except instead of working in a church, it's in an institution like a hospital. And that was widely true for a long time. I have found, though, lately that idea of a chaplain just doesn't fit anymore. More and more people don't necessarily claim a religious view, and so chaplains are trained to meet the needs of anybody, regardless of their religious beliefs. I think of spirituality as one of connections, how a person is connected to a higher being or to how they see themselves fit into the world. When somebody is sick, that gets interrupted. And so a chaplain is the one that kind of comes and walks alongside of them and helps them make sense of what's going on from their perspective instead of trying to impose some other perspective on them.
You know, I mean, let's recall it's St. Luke's Methodist Hospital.
Right.
Founded by the Methodist Church in 1884, as well as a lot of hospitals
right.
were founded with a religious context. And what percentage do you, at the beginning of your career as a hospital chaplain to now do you think people are less of a defined religious denomination?
I don't know if I can put a specific percentage onto it. I know that when we look at our census, the largest percentage of answers that we receive to that religious affiliation are either none or unaffiliated. And so Christianity is not necessarily the most popular thing anymore. That would probably come in second in the bigger picture between the Protestant and Catholic faiths. But for the most part, people are unaffiliated.
Hmm. Yeah, I was growing up, I'm from Cedar Rapids, and, you know, the kind of the Czech population had a high Catholic population.
Sure.
And more of a Protestant on the northeast side.
Yep.
You know, that's not strictly true anymore, but kind of historically, that's always
yeah.
my feeling. Growing up Catholic and had seen it from that standpoint. But I do think, I've always said this, the old school Cedar Rapidians, your delineation, whether you're St. Luke's or Mercy, is what side of First Avenue you live on.
Right.
You know, that's kind of regardless of the religious denomination. That's my opinion. But What I would think, I'm projecting on you, the hardest part of your job would be answering the question for some people of why is this happening to me? Why would God let bad things happen to a good person? Do you get that question?
Quite a bit. Yeah,
I bet.
In different forms.
But right.
Yeah, that's what goes through a lot of people's minds when they find themselves in the hospital. And oftentimes they've had other tragedies going on in their life. And so it is that little bit of why me, why is this happening? And doing some of their own soul searching in that regard.
How do you guide them through that?
Well, like I say, I try to explore from within their own faith. I don't want to impose any of my answers upon them. And so it's a little bit of an exploration. And sometimes I will just say, do you think that God is that way, that he's going to do something to you or treat you unfairly or anything? I often will sometimes say that rather than asking the question of why is this happening to me, the better question is what can I learn from this? And so I'll kind of guide a conversation along those lines to help them see that they can come out on the other side of this better. Even if they aren't healed from a physical standpoint, they can become a stronger person. They can learn something from that that's going to help them in their relationships in their life.
Interesting. Great advice. Just for anything, that's great advice, really. Yeah, the best way I had explained it was by a surgeon, Dr. Kopeski, who at one time considered the priesthood. And he said, it's like imagine if you were an animal in a trap, in like a bear trap, and you needed, and it would be painful to open that trap and release you, but in the end, it releases you. So this is part of the plan, so to speak.
And sure.
I always liked that analogy because I could understand it. But you know, it's always interesting to me at that end of life time that the families that have been very open and loving with each other and transparent tend to be at peace with things, remorseful, of course, but peaceful, where when you don't have a good relationship and then you get to that end of life scenario, there tends to be a lot of anger if they didn't have a good relationship through
your
life.
Yep.
You know, that's been my experience.
And
never pass up an opportunity to tell a loved one that you love them. Right?
Correct.
That's my advice.
Absolutely.
To people. So walk me through your day. I mean, what's your normal day?
Well, we start out like most people, or most departments, with our own morning huddles. At that time, we are looking at our census that we get a report of who wants to actually visit with the chaplain, specifically asking for that. Each one of us has our own units that we cover, and so they're just distributed based on that. We go to the ICU rounds, and we're also active on the palliative care team. And so one of us is always attending one of those rounding situations to see what's going on with some of the critical patients. We have a pager that is carried, kind of rotates through the staff, and that person covers the emergency department and any other the emergent situations that arise within the hospital.
How many chaplains do we have at any given time?
It varies. We are just bringing on another full-time staff chaplain, and so we have three full-time staff chaplains that will be on board, and then a couple of part-times as well.
And then do we still have someone in-house at night?
We have volunteers that are covering up until 8 o'clock.
Okay.
Yep. With COVID, our volunteer program got hit a little bit, and so instead of requiring the overnight, we decided to just scale back a little bit to help preserve that program.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember just back when I started the hospice program, how one of them would be here at night and we just exchange greetings.
Yep. We wish we could still be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was always nice to talk to them. Are all of them trained chaplains?
Yes. Chaplaincy is a little bit different than some of the other disciplines in that there's no necessarily licensing requirements by the state or anything. And so different hospitals will have different requirements to be a chaplain. Our staff chaplains are all either board certified or working towards that. Training for chaplaincy involves at least a bachelor's degree and preferably a master's degree in something related to providing care, whether it be theology, ministry type master's degrees, or social work, counseling are also excellent degrees to work from to become a chaplain. There's a program called Clinical Pastoral Education, we just call it CPE, that in order to achieve that board certification, chaplains do that so that they can get that clinical experience. It's kind of a combination of didactic teaching from a supervisor as well as just actually being out there and doing under supervision.
Kind of like a residency for
exactly.
physicians, right?
Yep. Okay. Yep. In fact, part of that is doing a residency in chaplaincy. I did mine up in La Crosse at Gunderson Hospital. Des Moines has a CPE program where they have residents there as well.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Are any of the other chaplains certain denominations and they specialize in that, or is it all more of a non-denominational, patient-centric sort of encounter?
Both. We are definitely a patient-centered approach where any one of us will talk to anybody from any denomination or any religious background. Right now, all of the chaplains that we have come from a Christian perspective, but we don't try to say, hey, this is a Lutheran patient, so we're going to send our Lutheran chaplain.
Okay, yeah, that's kind of my question.
Yep. So we don't really delineate in that way and just, you know, we just try to meet the needs. It's more unit-based, and so that we get embedded in a unit, and that way we can know what's going on that unit, which just helps us better serve the patients as
well. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that's true. And I think you're rounding with the ICU team, which has been going on for a long time.
Sure.
Has always been a plus.
Yes.
Definitely a plus.
Yeah.
Just keeping things patient-centric. And healthcare is a complicated system.
Yep.
It's a complex and complicated. Two different things there. Something, you know, can be complicated but not complex.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And I definitely think healthcare is. So it's nice to have your team there to guide us clinicians to keep us focused on the patient, because it's really easy to get focused on something else. It just really is.
Sure.
You know, really is. What, what's your favorite part about the job? What is the thing that you do that you go home at night and go, oh, yeah, that was worth it?
Well, there's a lot of things I think that I could fill in that blank with. I think where I get my most satisfaction is where you make that connection with somebody when they're going through a tragedy, whether it be a death, loss of an infant, new diagnosis, and you can just be there with them and just help them along that path that they're on. You know, some people will look at what chaplains do and say, I couldn't do that. You know, you're there at just about every death in the hospital. But at least for me personally, I find some satisfaction just knowing that I'm there at a time when somebody really needs somebody.
Yeah.
just to be there. The other side of it that I really enjoy and is doing the advanced directives. Sounds kind of strange just filling out a document, but when we're doing that, we're having a conversation with somebody, and a lot of their answers that they are putting down on that document stem from their belief system. You know, if they believe in an afterlife and have a strong faith in God, it might be easier for them to forego some of the more intense treatments at the end of life. And so just helping them process that, make sense of it, get it down in writing, and then knowing that that's going to impact their care down the road, I find to be very satisfying and enjoyable.
I've never had the courage to ask a patient. So I've had patients that are, let's say they're in their 90s,
mm-hmm.
and they'll do anything and everything to stay alive.
Right.
Like, I've never had the courage to say, are you afraid of dying? Which seems like a silly question to ask, right? But, you know, it was just, it seemed almost unreasonable on a certain level, because we're all going to die,
right?
And then I've had younger patients that have like a minor illness, and they're in their early 60s or late 50s. They're like, well, you got to die from something. I'm like, no, we can make this better. Don't, you know, let's not give up just yet.
Right.
You know? And just the comfortability with that. I've never had the courage to ask either one, like, why are you so comfortable with this? And why are you so afraid of this? And I hope to get the courage to get that answer from them before I meet my maker, you know. But do you see that too, that some patients are very comfortable with that and others are afraid?
Sure. And, you know, I would just kind of ditto what you say as far as you can get that person that's hanging on with everything that they've got in spite of the odds, and others that are very willing. It's a question that we ask frequently. So we're very comfortable asking that question of, you know, is this something that's fearful for you? I find that people's attitudes, you know, just have a lot to do with not just their recovery time if they're just have an illness, but also as they face the end of life, you know, if it's something that they're kind of saying, you know, not just we all die, but usually there's some faith attachment to that where they say, I know where I'm going. And, you know, I hear, you know, when the good Lord's ready to take me, I'm ready to go. I'm comfortable with that.
There's also the patient, though, young and old, that the burden of the healthcare experience, the pain and the suffering get to the point where they just say, I don't want to do this anymore.
Sure.
And I've seen that in younger people going through treatment for cancer that, you know, that have every reason to live, young family, you know, great family, great life, but they're just like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I've always thought about that too, that my grandmother was that way. She had a chronic lung disease, but she lived into her 90s, but she just got to the point, she goes, I don't, all my friends are dead. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And that's always intrigued me on that, you know, and it reminds us to keep things patient-centric.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And I find that, you know, we do get called and consulted for, you know, some of those new diagnoses where somebody's getting, you know, a terminal diagnosis and they're given a few months to live, and just to help them process that. And, so being able to sit down with somebody at that point in time and help them fit that into their worldview, their belief system, and what that looks like, you know, can be very rewarding, not just for us, but for the patient as well.
Yeah. Interesting. For listeners that might be interested in career and hospital chaplaincy, how do they get involved in that?
Well, like I say, a lot of times it comes out of a ministry background, but not always. Some of the training that can be done, the clinical pastoral education, you can get your feet wet doing that. Most of the programs will accept somebody regardless of their degree situation so that they can start getting that supervised experience working in a clinic setting. Having that degree is helpful as it progresses with your career, but going through the professional process, getting involved with a professional organization, either the, I can never get the initials right, ACPE, Association of Clinical Pastoral Education, or there's also the Spiritual Care Association, and both of those support professional chaplaincy. And so just being aware of them, studying, having the right heart, is a big thing.
Makes all the difference.
Yeah.
Well, I have a lot of respect for what you do and what your team does. I think it's so valuable. My faith is a huge part of my life. And thank you for what you do. I really sincerely mean that.
Thank you.
Thanks again for joining me.
You're welcome.
Being you're a veteran of the podcasting world. And thanks for sharing a day in the life of a hospital chaplain. Once again, this is Brent Reardon, a chaplain with St. Luke's Spiritual Care Department. If you're interested in a career at St. Luke's, visit unipoint.org/careers.
Thank you for listening to Live Well, Talk On. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe. And if you want to spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your family, friends, neighbors, strangers about our podcast. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, be well.